Chapter 15. The senior council members, as it turned out, do not live like paupers. After I passed through still more security checkpoints, the stone hallway yielded to a hall the size of a ballroom that looked like something out of Versailles. A white marble floor with swirls of gold in it was matched in color to elegant white marble columns. A waterfall fell from the far wall into a pool around which grew a plethora of plants, from grass to roses to small trees, forming a surprisingly complex little garden. The faint sound of wind chimes drifted through the air, and the golden light that poured down from crystals in the ceiling was indistinguishable from sunlight. Birds sang in the garden, and I saw the quick, darting black shape of a nightingale slalom between the pillars and settle in one of the trees. A number of expensive, comfortable-looking sets of furniture were spaced in and near the garden, like the sets you sometimes see at the pricier hotels. A small table against one wall was covered with an eclectic buffet of foods, everything from cold cuts to what looked like the sautéed tentacles of an octopus, and a wet bar stood next to it, ready to protect the senior council members from the looming threat of dehydration. A balcony ran around the entire chamber, 10 feet up, and doors opened onto the senior council members' private chambers. I paced through the enormous, grandiose space of the ostentatiatory to a set of stairs that swept grandly up one wall. I looked around until I spotted which door had a pair of temple dog statues standing guard along with a sleepy-looking young man in a warden's cape and a walking cast. I walked around the balcony and waved a hand at him. I was just about to speak when both temple dog constructs abruptly moved, turning their heads toward me with the grating sound of stone sliding against stone. I stopped in my tracks and held my hands up a little. "Nice doggy." The young warden peered at me and said something in a language I didn't recognize. He looked like someone from Eastern Asia, though I couldn't have guessed at his nation of origin. He stared at me for a second, and I recognized him abruptly as one of the young men on Ancient Mai's personal staff. The last time I'd seen him, he'd been frozen half to death, trying to bear a message to Queen Mab. Now a broken ankle had presumably kept him from joining the search for Morgan. Some people are just born lucky, I guess. "Good evening," I said to him, in Latin, the official tongue of the White Council. "How are you?" Lucky stared at me for another moment before he said, "We are in Scotland. It is morning, sir." Right. My half-hour walk had taken me 6 time zones ahead. "I need to speak with Wizard Listens to Wind." "He is occupied," Lucky told me. "He is not to be disturbed." "Wizard McCoy sent me to speak to him," I countered. "He felt it was important." Lucky narrowed his eyes until they were almost closed. Then he said, "Wait here, please. Do not move." The temple dogs continued staring at me. Okay, I knew they weren't really staring. They were just rock. But for essentially mindless constructs, they had an intense gaze. "That will not be a problem," I told him. He nodded and vanished through the door. I waited for 10 uncomfortable minutes before he returned, touched each dog lightly on the head, and nodded to me. "Go in." I took a wary step, watching the constructs, but they didn't react. I nodded and went on by them, trying not to look like a nervous cat as I passed from the ostentatiatory into Lafortier's chambers. The first room I came to was a study, or an office, or possibly a curio shop. There was a massive desk carved out of some kind of unstained wood. Though use and age had darkened the front edge, the handles of the drawers, and the area immediately in front of the modern office chair. A blotter lay precisely centered on the desk with a set of 4 matching pens laid in a neat row. Shelves groaned with books, drums, masks, pelts, old weaponry, and dozens of other tokens that looked as though they came from exotic lands. The wall spaces between the shelves were occupied by shields fronted with 2 crossed weapons, a Norman kite shield with crossed broadswords, a Zulu buffalo hide shield with crossed assegais, a Persian round shield with a long spike in its center with crossed scimitars, and many others. I knew museums that would declare Mardi Gras in the galleries if they could get their hands on a collection half that rich and varied.